Learnard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as it addition.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 21st day of September 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. And Mike Barwinski, a senior trader with Louis Dreyfus, will join us to take up the agricultural energy markets. In just 26 minutes, meteorologist Don Day will be here with a look at the agricultural weather forecast. And along the way, we'll check harvest progress and crop conditions with the USDA NASS state statisticians from around the Midwest. So stay with us for this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois. Let's check the numbers as they settled up in Chicago. On this Tuesday afternoon, futures like this, the December contract, a 13.75 settlement lower in the wheat pit at $7.18. December corn, 5.05 and a quarter, down 3. The March at 5.18, 3 and a quarter lower. May contract down 3 cents. In July, 5.26 and a quarter, down 2.5. September corn up a penny today at $4.97 and a quarter. December at 4.73 and 3 quarters, up a half cent. November beans today, $10.80. Down 4.5, January at 10.90, 4.5 lower. In the March, 10.97.5, down 4.1. And then in the November of next year, $10.66 and 3 quarters, down 3 and 3 quarters on the afternoon. Bean meal futures, 303.50, down 2.60. Bean oil at 42.42, down 23 for the day. Let's take a look at what the mercantile exchange numbers look like. October feeder cattle today, 97.50, down 65. Live cattle at $100 and a nickel, down 55 cents. The February is at 101.72.5, down 42.5. September feeders, 110.50, down 15. October contract, 110.65, down a dime. And November feeders, 111 and 2.5 cents, 7.5 cents lower. Lean hogs at 79.30, 77.5 cents higher. December contract at $77.75, up 30 cents for the day. February futures, $80.50, up 12.5 cents on this Tuesday afternoon. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report. You can always hear us on the website at willag.org. That's willag.org. I know you're busy. If you can't get to the website and you're busy in the time we're on the air, you can always try this phone number. We post a bit of our analysis and either the opening numbers or the closing numbers to 217-333-3434. That's 333-3434 at 10:15 and 3:15 daily. Let's take a look at the outside numbers now. October crude oil futures, $73.52 a barrel, down $1.34. Ethanol at $2.11, down 3.9. And the natural gas at $3.92.4, up 10.2. October heating oil, $2.11.8, up 2/10 of a cent, rather down 2/10 of a cent. And the gold futures today at $1,272.40, down $6.60 an ounce. The Dow Jones Industrial Average stands at 10,800 at this hour. It's just about 47 points higher. The dollar at 80.44 is down 0.89, and the CRB index at 278.36 is down 1.28 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the immediate area surrounding Urbana-Champaign looks like this afternoon, as prepared by the National Weather Service. It says mostly sunny skies today, high near 93 degrees, southwest winds between 15 miles an hour with gusting as high as 23 miles an hour. Tonight, showers, a few thunderstorms. That'll happen likely mainly in the area. After 1 a.m., mostly cloudy, a low of 66 degrees, south-southwest winds between around 8 miles an hour, rather. The chance of precipitation tonight, 60%. A 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms tomorrow, mostly cloudy, a high near 86 degrees, southwest winds between 6 and 11 miles an hour. And Wednesday night, it'll be partly cloudy, a low of 65 degrees, south-southwest winds around 8 miles an hour. Thursday, mostly sunny skies, a high near 91, breezy, south-southwest winds between 8 and 11. That'll increase between 17 and 20 miles an hour throughout the day. Winds will gust as high as 30 miles an hour tomorrow on Thursday. And then Thursday night, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Again, after 1 a.m., mostly cloudy, though, a low of about 68 degrees. More on the weather when we get to the bottom of the hour. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. On the phone line with us today to take a look at what's been happening in the agricultural futures markets, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
It's a beautiful afternoon. I'll bet there are a lot of folks that are done shucking corn in your area. Is that the case?
You know, we've been moving along rather fast. We've went a little harder in the bean fields over in our area than the corn, Todd, but, you know, we're seeing a lot of fields that have been harvested a lot farther along than usual at this time of the year, that's for sure.
And then as they talk to you about the bean yields, tell me what they're finding.
Bean yields have been exceptionally good for what we were expecting. With all the dryness and that coming along, I would say they're above average bean yields for our area. And as we talk around the country, why, you know, other than down in the Mid-South on the dry land, why the yields are all probably 5 to 10 bushel better than what they were thinking they could possibly be with the very dry August. So bean yields looking very strong.
What did you make of yesterday's run-up in the beans, and then why didn't it follow through today?
Well, I think, you know, there's a couple things. Number one, we had the idea, we had an announcement of Chinese purchases yesterday. We thought there would be another one this morning, which there was. You know, we run up a little bit on the weather in South America being very dry. You know, it's a little soon to be killing the crop that hasn't even been planted yet in South America. I think number one and number two, the bean yields continue to come in extremely good here. And I think that, you know, we're going to be looking at a very much of a big crop and hedging, you know, say the farmers are making sales up at these levels over $10 cash beans. And we noticed they did break the cash basis in the local area back about another 5 cents today, widened it out a little bit that way, Todd. So I think all those things, you know, the crude oil being lower and that along with it, why that was some of the reasons that we backed off a little bit today.
Right thing to do in your mind?
I think at these hefty levels that it's awfully hard to rally every day, number one. And number two, we are in the throes of harvest. We were told that Lafayette wasn't taking beans for a day or two while they moved some stuff around. Other places getting full. Our old elevator over at Rochdale was 45 minute to an hour wait to get dumped. So in the throes of all that sort of harvest and better yields, why it's not unexpected to see a 4 or 5 cent setback.
Any word on the corn before I let you go?
The corn, we're seeing varied yields, but it's improving and doing fairly good. We were a little bit disappointed that after we rebounded today, but I think there's a lot of end users down that 490 to 495 area that are willing to buy this corn.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon.
Lernard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Lernard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids, to farmers throughout East Central Illinois. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
It's a Tuesday afternoon. Yesterday, USDA NASS released its updated crop progress reports. It shows that nationwide, or at least in the 18 states that are surveyed, corn at the dented stage now has increased to 98%. That compares with 93% last week, 79% last year, and the rolling five-year average of 91 on the dented stage. Mature at 69% compares to the rolling five-year average of 48, and just 20% mature last year at this same time. 18% of the corn crop has been harvested in those 18 states. Last week, that was at 11. Last year at 4. The five-year average is 10. By the way, here are the numbers on the five top corn-producing states. Iowa now 6% harvested. Illinois, 38%, Nebraska, 5%, Minnesota, 1%, and Indiana, 27% harvested for corn. On the soybean side, 60% of the soybeans are dropping their leaves. That compares to 52% on the five-year average. 8% of the crop has been harvested nationwide, at least in those 18 states, compared to 2% last year, and 6% on the rolling five-year average. Now, here are the state statisticians with updates from their areas.
This is Tyler Armstrong with USDA NASS, Iowa Field Office, with the Iowa Crops and Weather Report for the week ending September 19, 2010. Iowa experienced another week of cool weather last week, as average high temperatures for much of the state were in the mid-70s. Along with average lows dipping into the mid-50s, Iowa witnessed several rain showers throughout the week. South Central Iowa received the largest amounts, as thunderstorms over the weekend brought heavy rains totaling over 6 inches in some locations. While heavy rains fell in the south, most of Iowa received around an inch or less. Rainfall amounts were enough to create muddy field conditions and limit farmers to an average of 4.8 days suitable for field work. The wet, cool weather slowed crop development after several weeks of rapidly maturing and drying. However, crop progress continues to be ahead of last year, with 79% of corn acres reaching maturity 18 days ahead of last year, and leaves beginning to drop in 57% of the soybean acres 3 days ahead of last year. Early planted corn harvest progressed to 6% complete, with an estimated moisture content of 21%. Soybean harvest also progressed last week and is now 4% complete. This has been Tyler Armstrong with USDA NAS, Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending September 19, 2010.
This is Brad Schwab, Chief Crop Statistician with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Illinois Field Office. Statewide, corn in the mature stage advanced to 90%, compared to only 12% last year and 55% for the five-year average. 38% was reported harvested by week's end, compared to 1% last year and 12% for the five-year average. The crop reporting district leading the state in corn harvest activity was the southwestern district, where 77% had been cut. Overall, the corn crop was rated in 54% good or excellent condition, down 5 percentage points from last week. Soybeans, in the turning yellow category, were reported at 87%, compared to 49% a year ago and 73% for the five-year average. 65% of the crop was shedding leaves, compared to 18% a year ago and 44% for the five-year average. 10% of the crop was reported harvested, compared to 5% for the five-year average. Overall, the soybean crop was rated in 60% good or excellent condition, down 4 percentage points from last week. This has been Brad Schwab with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is David Biar of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service with the crop weather report for the week ending September 19, 2010. Rain and cool temperatures slowed dry down of grain and limited field access. The first fields of soybeans and sorghum were harvested, with corn harvest gaining momentum in the eastern half of the state. Winter wheat seeding progressed to the halfway mark, however, emergence was behind last year on average. Wind and hail caused damage to crops and property in scattered areas of the state. Cattle were being vaccinated and calf crops were taken to market. Pastures remained in great condition for this late in the year. Irrigated corn conditions rated 85% good or excellent, while dryland corn rated 79%. Corn in the dense stage was 98%, corn mature was 48%, and corn harvested was 5%. Soybeans turning color were 86%, and soybeans dropping leaves were at 44%. Harvest of soybeans has started. Winter wheat seeded reached 51%, while winter wheat emerged with 7%. This is David Biar of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
This is Dan Loftus, Deputy Director of the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with highlights from the weekly crop weather report for the week ending September 19, 2010. The first reports of corn and soybean harvest arrived during the week, though wet conditions continued to delay field work. As of September 19th, corn was 1% harvested compared to 0% last year and 2% for the five-year average. Corn silage harvest advanced to 83% compared to 36% last year and 64% average. Soybeans were 3% harvested compared to 1% last year and 4% average. Other harvest progress included potatoes at 50%, sweet corn at 92%, dry beans at 52%, and sugar beets at 13% harvested. All were ahead of their respective averages. A few producers reported that wet conditions prevented the harvest of mature crops. Temperatures for the week were unseasonably cool. The statewide average temperature was 3.5 degrees below normal, with some areas reporting a low of 30 degrees. Precipitation remains above normal for most reporting stations. Thunderstorms, along with some hail, lightning, and high winds prevailed Thursday. Weekly precipitation was greatest in the central region, with 1.3 inches above normal. Statewide topsoil moisture supplies were rated 59% adequate and 40% surplus, the highest surplus rating so far this year. Statewide, 3.2 days were rated suitable for field work. 98% of corn was in the dense stage compared to 73% last year and 92% average. corn in the mature stage was 49% compared to 4% last year and 37% average. Corn is rated in 53% good and 36% excellent condition, nearly equal to last week. Soybeans were 95% turning yellow compared to 82% last year and 91% average. 68% of soybeans were shedding leaves compared to 44% last year and 63% average. Soybeans were 25% mature compared to 9% last year and 25% average. Soybeans were rated in 55% good and 32% excellent condition, nearly equal to last week. This is Dan Loftus for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office.
Hello, this is Greg Preston, Director of the USDA NAS Field Office for Indiana, and this is the Crop Weather Report for the week ending September 19th. Light and scattered rains, primarily in north-central Indiana, did little to slow down harvest activity, affect grain dry down, or to improve pasture conditions. Despite the rain, corn harvest activity is advancing at a record pace. Currently, corn harvest at 27% complete overshadowed the previous 1991 record pace of 20% completed at this time. The hot and dry field conditions could use more rain to reduce the chances of field fires. The continued dry condition have resulted in steady declines in the pasture condition ratings. 88% of the corn crop is mature, compared with 13% for last year and 44% for the five-year average. 27% of the corn crop has been harvested, compared with 0% last year and 6% for the five-year average. By area of the state, 19% of the corn has been harvested in the north, 23% has been harvested in the central region, and 53% in southern Indiana. Corn condition for the week was rated 56% good to excellent, compared to 62% for last year at this time. The moisture content of harvested corn is averaging at 17%. 79% of the soybean acreage is shedding leaves, compared to 36% for last year and 55% for the five-year average. 20% of the soybean crop has been harvested, compared with 0% for last year and 3% for the five-year average. By area of the state, 13% of the soybean crop has been harvested in the north, 28% in the central region, and 16% in southern Indiana. Soybean condition is rated as 51% in the good to excellent category, compared with 59% last year at this time. Moisture content of the harvested soybeans is averaging 12%. This is Greg Preston reporting from the Indiana NAS Field Office.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois. Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason at Chris and Fritz Robinson's home in Kinney, Illinois. Thank you so much, Fritz, for having me to the home place.
You are very welcome. It's glad to have you over here, all the way over on the Honda, I see.
Oh, I rode a bike over. That's right. And, you know, the nice thing about that is you on the motorcycle, as you know, because you ride, you can smell what's happening in the fields, too. And I smelled freshly turned ground. Of course, I saw that as well. There is an awful lot of ground between Champaign, Illinois, and Kinney, Illinois, which probably 45 or 50 miles thereabouts, that's actually turned over. There's not much corn left, and I suppose they're getting ready to do the soybeans, but I didn't see a whole lot of combines in the field doing soybeans today. Are you all done with your corn?
We're finishing up on corn. We've got a couple fields left. We're working on one now. It's a little tougher to get out up there. We're having to run the auger wagon up to the trucks. The elevators are doing a great job of handling the grain this fall, drier, the moisture, and it's not Thanksgiving or December this year. We're really surprised.
Yeah, if things work out, you'll probably be done by when? The 15th of October with everything?
I would hope so. Yeah, that'd be a nice change all of a sudden to be able to do that for a year.
How your crops look compared to last year?
Honestly, the corn is not as good as last year. Our corn is probably running 30 to 35 bushel down from what it was last year, but the price is up. That's a benefit. The bottom line may not be as far off as what a lot of guys anticipated early.
You have corn on corn, and is there much difference between those two?
I had a whopping 4 acres of corn on corn is all I had. And you know what? It really wasn't a whole lot different than the corn following beans. I've talked to some other guys, though, and I've heard some real horror stories on corn on corn.
Chris, do you get in the field or you stay here at home?
No, I'm real active in the field.
You run the combine or you run the tractors and wagons?
Both. My son taught me how to drive the combine a few years back, and so I can do that or drive the grain truck or the tractor or auger wagon. So I'm very diverse here in this.
And which one do you like to do better, and which one does he do you tell him you want to do?
I guess it depends on the terrain. I really don't like crossing the waterways when I'm in the combine. The nice, straight, flat fields are real nice. But I do like my grain trucks and going to the elevator and, the road trip. So
I had a question, and either of you can answer this because I know you both have probably watched the yield monitors. I've heard that this season there is a difference because it was a little wet early on and that maybe some of this corn doesn't really like wet feet as much as it used to, that ground that was rolling just a bit and that the water could get off of was doing a bit better than the big flat black stuff that we're used to in the state of Illinois.
Actually, my rolling timber ground has been some of my best yielding corn. The good flat black ground just kind of on the western edge of DeWitt County towards the Logan County line has had holes in it. The only thing that was living there was three deer and a herd of rabbits. So.
Well, that happens. What do you do since Farm Credit is here and they're concerned about safety? It is National Farm Safety and Health Week after all. What do you do to think about safety as you get into the harvest season? I know we're a long ways into it at this point.
As far as safety, I've been a member of the Kenny Fire Department for 29 years. We've been on calls anywhere from grain bin extrications to accidents on the highway with people running into farm equipment and vice versa. You just have to slow down, take your time, think about it. Being in a rush ends up costing you in the long run. Just be safe, be careful. And like you said, if you need a nap, you need to take one of those power naps, go ahead and take it. You know, it's not gonna hurt a thing. Just relax, and we'll get it. We got it done last year. Might have been December, but we got it done. We always seem to get it done. Just remember that this big equipment is when we're out on the road and we're in a hurry. Just have to be extremely careful, because if anybody's been on an accident scene, it's not pretty when a car or a truck runs into a piece of farm equipment.
Let's go back to some of the other things, because you're a fire chief. What kind of training do you do for grain bin extrication? Who does that? I'm making an assumption here that in Kenny, Illinois, you're all volunteers.
It is a volunteer department, and I was the fire chief. I retired from that position a couple of years ago. Still on the department, safety officer now. My son is captain on the department. My oldest son is an engineer for Clinton Fire. We've been doing this for a long time. The training, we get all sorts of training. We've done grain bin extrication training. There's numerous companies do it. I know GSI in Decatur, they have a program. They have an extrication tube. We're looking at one of those. One of the programs I started before I left with the Fire Chiefs Association was an extrication tube. And we have that approved. We have several donors that are going to help buy it. But then I heard we may get a grant, so we may not have to worry about buying it. We may get a grant to get this extrication tube.
All right. Fritz, Chris, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for having me here for lunch and for Farm Credit Service, too, for helping us out.
You're certainly welcome. Thanks for coming.
That's Fritz and Chris Robinson of Kenny, Illinois. I was on their place at the noon hour today. In just 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast.
Services during this National Farm Safety and Health Week.
National Rum Punch Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1819, Seth Boynton was issued the first patent for manufacture of patent leather in the U.S. Boynton is also remembered for a host of other inventions, including a nail-making machine and a hybrid strawberry. In 1842, Sir James Dewar was born. A British chemist and physicist, he invented the Dewar flask, the original thermos bottle. His design incorporated a double-walled flask. He created a vacuum between two silvered layers of steel or glass. In 1859, George B. Simpson patented the electric range. He called his invention an electroheater. In 1878, Uptown Sinclair was born. His novel, The Jungle, was a detailed horror story about the conditions in the meatpacking industry of the time in Chicago. It led to extensive reforms. In 1888, David Marin was born, an American pathologist. His research on the treatment of goiters with iodine led to the iodizing of table salt. And in 1960, Ernest Goodpasture died, a research scientist. He used chick embryos in designing the first practical method for developing uncontaminated viruses, which made possible the mass production of vaccines for diseases such as smallpox and influenza. And that's this day in agricultural history.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
This is the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. On the phone line with us is Mike Tenor today of T-Storm Weather to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Thanks for filling in for Don Day. We do appreciate that, Mike.
Hey, not a problem, Todd. Not a problem at all.
You've been watching the global outlook for our primary crops, and you suggest there are lots of areas that we ought to take up, both for wheat and soybeans. Why don't you go through what you think is important?
Yeah, well, I mean, we can start right here in North America, but I mean, the first thing that you have going on is that we had a pretty substantial freeze, and the growing season ended in the Canada prairies over the weekend, especially Friday and Saturday. So they're done now, and the spring wheat and canola crop could have been affected a little bit by that, though much of the harvesting season is well underway. So that's kind of issue number one. Issue number two is going on in Western Australia. The western part of Australia accounts for about 40% of their winter wheat production, and it's been really dry there over the last several months. It's going to stay dry, and now they're starting to move into some key phases of development, so it does not look like much rain is on the way over the next 10 days in Western Australia. And that's a potential problem for the bigger wheat picture across the world, though we should also mention that the eastern 60% of the wheat production area of Australia is having a great growing season with lots of rain, not too much heat, and so you're kind of seeing a mixed condition there. As you head further north, as you get into China, there's some light frost taking place in their northern corn and soybean regions, basically beginning right now and then continuing over the next few mornings. But they've been harvesting there for a while, too, so it's kind of a minor deal. I wouldn't say it's a full-blown problem. But you can even go into Eastern Europe, where you're seeing dryness still in Eastern Ukraine, though they did have some big rains in Central Ukraine yesterday. They need lots of rain in Ukraine and in Russia to get their winter wheat planting off. And right now it's staying dry in Russia. So if we don't see some big rains there in the next couple of weeks, again, that'll have another potential problem for the world wheat market. So lots of things going on internationally.
And then come right back to home and give us a quick forecast for the week here in the Midwest.
Yeah, well, here in the Midwest, we're going to see corn and soybean harvesting start to slow, beginning shortly. I mean, we're seeing some pretty big storms right now out in Iowa, and even a few developing right now in just north of Bloomington. So those are moving eastward. There was a severe thunderstorm watch in effect for northern Illinois for this afternoon and evening. So harvesting slowing along the Interstate 80 corridor, and then a much larger storm system moves through tomorrow night and into Thursday, and that brings heavy rain to the northwest half of the Corn Belt, so a big slowing of harvesting taking place there. But after that, it turns nice and dry. Champaign-Urbana will be right along the eastern edge of all of this, so while there should be some rains tonight and possibly again tomorrow night, or should I say Thursday night, they could largely avoid the big rain. So hopefully that'll work out, but it looks better in the eastern Corn Belt for harvesting than in the central and west over the next few days.
Thanks so much, Mike. Mike Tenor is with T-Storm Weather. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is the Farming World. The University of Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason on the phone line with us today. Matt Hughes and Dean Campbell both are either have been chair or currently chair of the Supply Committee at the Illinois Soybean Association here in the state and sit on that board now. We're going to talk a little bit about research and go through a booklet they've released not long ago called Ideas That Elevate. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us. Matt, let's start with you, and we'll do the same thing with Dean, but we'd like to get to know you just a bit. Tell me about yourself and where you're from.
Yes. Well, thanks for having us today. We really appreciate being on, get a chance to talk about some of our research activities. I farm with my wife around in McLean County area, just south of Bloomington. We raise corn and soybeans over there. I've been on the soybean board going on my fifth year now and served. As you mentioned, I was supply committee chairman for the last couple of years. I've moved up to, I'm now vice chairman of the Soybean Association and kind of taking over some more of the policy activities we do there and kind of turn things over to Dean for the supply side of it here for this coming year.
So, Dean, you're now the chair of the supply committee, and these are the folks that take a look at research. Tell me about yourself.
Okay. I grew up and farmed. The home farm's been in my family for about 150-plus years. Down southwestern Illinois, Randolph County, about 50 miles southeast of St. Louis. And I've also been on the soybean board. I'm in my fifth year also and was just elected to the executive committee, which I was the one chosen to be the supply committee chairman out of the exec committee. We each of us chair one of our standing committees. And so I've been involved with the research area, served on that committee now. This will be my fourth year on the research committee. So Matt and I are both up to speed as board members on the research that we have conducted over the past few years.
Matt, a couple of things. I make note in the booklet that you start out by giving an overview of the research investments and explain what a managed research approach is. That's what you probably call an MRA. Where do the dollars come from, and what is an MRA?
Well, the dollars come from your checkoff. You know, every soybean farmer in the whole United States, if you sell soybeans, you pay a checkoff, which is 0.5% of the value that soybeans gets put into a fund. And the Illinois Soybean Association is responsible for overseeing and administering that checkoff here in the state of Illinois for the Illinois producers. We keep half of that money here at the state level and invested in programs, various programs, including the research we're going to talk about today. We also invest in other areas like market development, new uses, and just basic education. The other half of that goes to our national organization, which is the United Soybean Board, and they invest in national initiatives, and we help them in that level as well. So we try to leverage all of our dollars all the way along, whether it be through USP or government sources or even private sources, to try to add more money to the mix and what we can do with our checkoff dollars there. The MRA itself is kind of unique to Illinois in some respects. It's in Illinois, we deal with four major universities, University of Illinois, of course, Southern Illinois University at Carbondale, Illinois State University in Bloomington, and Western Illinois University over at Macomb. And they all four do research in agriculture areas. And in the past, it's always been a problem because everybody's bringing proposals and they're all trying to do their own little thing. And so one of our initiatives as a board was to initiate this managed research area, which tries to bring all the universities together and make them cooperate and talk to each other. And instead of us bringing all individual proposals from all the universities, we coordinate that activity so we're not don't have a lot of redundancy and a lot of wasted dollars. So we try to make more efficient use of our research that way and make it more focused on outcomes rather than trying to fight with the political politics that got involved before. So it's been a real positive movement for us over the past few years, and something we're very proud of, and trying to, a lot of other states are looking at to us as a good model to try to follow in that footstep.
Your MRAs target 5 primary areas?
Yeah, they do. The areas that we were targeting in the fiscal year 09 were, 5 areas, that being the soybean diseases and insect pests. Soybean cyst nematode was the second. Then weeds areas, what species are problems for Illinois farmers and how can we control those and what kind of research can we work on in that control. Then the soybean germplasm and breeding, trying to look at how we can improve that breeding situation. And then soy nutrition and food science, where we were projects for obesity in children and juvenile diabetes through a lot of nutritional programs, utilizing soy nutrients. And so now this coming year for fiscal year 11, we've added another one in there for the animal nutrition, and we always realized and we're proud that we try to work with the animal agriculture in our state because we know that is one of our biggest users of our product, whether that be soy meal and or oil.
So those are the research areas for 2009, a preview of what will happen in 2011. And then before we delve into each of those separately or the research that's already been completed, maybe we should talk about the yield challenge for 2010. And Dean, we can stay with you for this, I think, and what that might be. That's something that involves actually the soybean specialist here on campus, Vince Davis. And I've done a couple of stories about this 2010 yield challenge. It's underway right now. What are you hoping to accomplish?
We're hoping to surface some new and innovative ideas that may be utilized out across the state by our fellow soybean producers. And Vince has been very instrumental in putting a database together that we can then look at the data as it comes in. But we're currently working, is my recollection, 40-some teams, as we're calling it, across the state. Each of those teams may have up to 10 producers or FFA chapters or collegiate participants involved with them, and we have those three classes in our quote challenge. And they are competing yield-wise against their companions in the 9 districts, which are the reporting districts across the state, crop reporting districts. We use those because they were all previously set up. But our main goal is to, as I said earlier, pick up those new and innovative things because each participant will have one plot of what is it, 4 acres?
A 10-acre plot, and they're going to harvest 2 acres out of each.
Right. Yeah. Right. So they're basically two plots. One, the way you would normally in your day-to-day farming activities, how you would produce soybeans there, and then on the other plot would be anything new you want to try. As long as it's on the label for the products, we condone it. And, whether that's applying fungicides, extra fertilizer, different herbicide routine, anything that we can look at, and then we want to compare. How did that match up? Did it improve? Okay, what segment of it was the help? That's the kind of things that Vince will be trying to glean from the information as we collect it at the end of the year.
Absolutely. So you'll be using Illinois as one really big, large research plot and looking for best management practices or new and innovative best management practices. And Vince Davis here on campus will be taking care of compiling those. Let's move on to the research that's been completed, Matt. Can you tell me about diseases and insect pests and what you're looking for? And maybe we can start with soybean aphids because that's all about the genes.
Oh, yes, yeah. Oh, yeah, you know, when you talk about diseases and insect pests, it's kind of the way it sounds. You know, we're looking at aphids and Japanese beetle and all the insects that you can think about that attack soybeans and all the diseases. But on the side of aphids, you know, we're actually working in a variety of areas, some very basic, just trying to understand the insect and how it functions and what the DNA of it is. But, of course, from a farmer perspective, we're always focusing on the outcomes and whether that be, you know, trying to understand what kind of resistance we might be up against with our traditional, you know, the only control methods we have right now are insecticides. So we need to understand if what we can do to manage that resistance as we move forward. The most promising work we have coming is we do have some resistant varieties coming out, the RAG1 and RAG2 genes that are being introduced in the market right now. So we'll hopefully get some resistance built into our soybean varieties to deal with the aphids. And we're also looking at seed treatments. And again, this is the other aspect of our research, is trying to validate products that are on the market to make sure that they are effective and doing what they claim to do. So in case of seed treatments, for example, some of them work and some of them don't. And that's our job, too, to make sure when a farmer tries something that he's not out there by himself and just taking a company's word for it in a lot of cases.
Dean, one of the biggest robbers of yield in the state has been soybean cyst nematode, though it works underground, isn't often seen in the way of something that a farmer might pick up in the leaf or the stem of that bean plant, but it can take 30 to 50% of a crop pretty quickly. What kind of SCN or soybean cyst nematode research have you been doing?
Well, it is a very, very small critter, microscopic to be exact, and it is a big robber of our yields in the state, and it's hidden because it works in the soil. But we've been doing a lot of research on the genome of that little critter and trying to figure out how it interacts with other pests, so to speak, whether that be the sudden death syndrome or some of the other, the rhizoctonia. To get pronunciation correct. All these scientific names get very, very confusing to keep up with. But we are seeing interactions, whereas the nematode not only makes an entry way for some of these other pathogens, but may also trying to see what the correlation is once they have both infected a plant or only one infects it. There's considerable research going on there. And we're very well blessed here in the state of Illinois that we have Dr. Jason Bond at SIU and Dr. Terry Niblack at Illinois, two of the renowned nematologists in the country, is working on our soybean problems with the soybean cyst nematode. So it's very exciting. Research that they're doing, if you're into very small worms that infect the soybean plant. But it is very important to our producers because we have lost some of the resistance due to the nematode changing its characteristics and actually able to attack our resistant varieties that we have. And I think one of the avenues that they brought out, and we need to look into that very deeply to figure out how we can stay ahead of the mutation of this very small organism.
We're talking with Matt Hughes and Dean Campbell of the Illinois Soybean Association, back in 2 minutes here on The Farming World.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, Hudsonville, Illinois, and Crescent City, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027. The farming world is coming to an end on the first day of October after a six-month run. We thank you for your support and we look forward to the advancement of our core mission, distributing regionally, nationally, and internationally information and analysis of commodity markets and agricultural weather. When the situation warrants, you can rest assured we'll follow key agricultural topics and stories, and we'll make room for discussions with those that influence the political spectrum of agriculture in the closing market report, which remains in its traditional 206 to 236 time slot. Again, thank you for your support as we wrap up the farming world. This is the Farming World from the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. Today we're talking with Matt Hughes and Dean Campbell. Both are from the Illinois Soybean Association and have been involved in how the research dollars are dispersed and those checkoff dollars, how they're used and the kinds of research that is happening at the four universities here in the state. Let's start and pick up now with the weeds, Matt. Weeds are primary competition, and they do a lot of damage in the field if they're not controlled. What kind of work has been done in the state with the checkoff dollars?
Oh, yeah. We're always looking at new weeds, of course, and things. But, of course, the most relevant topic today would be resistance, and that's what we try to keep an eye on more than anything when we talk weeds, and more specifically glyphosate resistance and multi-herbicide resistance that we're seeing, things like water hemp and the ragweeds and things like that that we're having a harder and harder time dealing with. And so we do a lot of research there trying to understand how the resistance develops, how it's spreading, and then more importantly, how trying to develop some management practices that can help alleviate that, looking at different tank mixes of products, for example, and evaluating those, and looking at ways that we can, you know, help avoid any further resistance down the line or minimize it at least. So.
And then a lot of that is done here on this campus. Of course, Brian Young at SIU in Carbondale does some work with it too, doesn't he?
Oh, yes. In fact, you know, just backing up a little bit, we deal with four major universities throughout the Illinois here at Champaign, Carbondale, Western Illinois University in Macomb, and Illinois State University in Normal. And they all get involved in all these MRAs at some level. Of course, like you mentioned, the bulk of it's getting done at Champaign and Carbondale. And Brian Young is definitely at Carbondale, one of the leading experts in the area of glyphosate-resistant weeds, in my opinion, and does a great job down there.
If I remember correctly, and since I'm here on campus, and I haven't looked this up for a while, but I have done some work with him, I think he has a 0% appointment here at the University of Illinois, too. So we'll take claim to him for a while, at least for some of the research he's done. Let's move on. Soybean germplasm. It's always important to look into the germplasm and try to update the genetics in the bean. What are we looking for, and what kinds of research has been done?
Okay, we've been working quite extensively in this over the years, bringing in new germplasms from China, the origin from Asia, the origin of the soybean originally, and we worked over the years to bring in a number of new cessations or new varieties, you might say, or old varieties that are new to the United States. But along those lines, we're focusing our research for quote, the breeding of beans into the non-GMO varieties. We try to target the areas that the private industries, seed industries, may not be targeting, and keep our focus on things that are going to help the entire soybean industry in the state of Illinois. One of those areas that we've had success through the breeding programs is to incorporate the RAG1 and RAG2 genes, as we talked about earlier, which give us resistance to the soybean aphid. And another area is the white hybridization, and we've had Ram Singh, but he has developed a wide hybridization of the soybean with a distant relative, and the glycine tomentella. That's the genus name, the scientific name, but he's trying and has succeeded to bring in at least one gene that is showing resistance to Asian soybean rust. And some of the, you know, that's only one avenue that's been searched out. But we are trying to do on these breeding initiatives and things, we are also trying to capture the intellectual properties that may be there, the patentable products.
Matt, only about a minute and a half to touch on these very quickly, soy nutrition and then nanotechnology.
Well, soy nutrition, you know, that's when a lot of people think about soybeans of net consumer. That's the first thing they think about. They don't realize we still feed, you know, 70% of the soybeans we grow goes into livestock feeds and such. But a lot of soy meal is used in soy nutrition, and the oil is almost exclusively human health and things like that. So we're looking at trying to make oil more healthy, make better programs for kids. We got a program called Are You a Healthy Kid, for example, is a great program just trying to help combat childhood obesity. We're trying to work on diabetes and things, fighting that with soybean nutrition and things like that. And a lot of good health things that coming out of soybeans. And then on to nanotechnology, and that's really what gets me more excited than anything at the moment. That's kind of the latest cutting-edge technology out there. And to be quite honest, we struggle with that as a board because we don't even know where to take it because it's so new. But we are starting to look at some things, and we're trying to establish the University of Illinois, for example, as a center for nanotechnology in the nation. And we think there's a lot of potential here that we can do as we look at nanotechnology. In terms of, like, there's things like carbon nanotubes and things that can enhance seedling growth, and we can do a lot of things. And most of these things we're talking about are in the non-GMO world. So nanotechnology is doesn't have a lot of the implications of the we've been through with, like, some of the Roundup technologies and other things we've dealt with in the genetically modified environments. And so they're going to be more favorable, but there's a lot of open sky out here and a lot of new ideas that we can start exploring and start to answer a lot of questions we've never been able to look at before. And I think that's going to be very exciting in the future.
Matt Hughes, thank you so much. Dean Campbell, too. Both are Illinois farmers, set on the Illinois Soybean Association board, and have chaired at one time or another the Supply Committee. You've been listening to The Farming World. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.